freaking auto!
This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports.
We're going to see you on the interview.
Don't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Hello, good morning, Brock. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Michael.
You know, when Pete was let go, yep, and Mike McDonald was hired, my mind did immediately go to that basketball hoop, right, as the symbol of Pete's time and influence here, watching over everything. And McDonald had to remove it. It just would have been a constant reminder, looking over his shoulder, of the massive personality that had walked out the door and who he was trying to replace. It had to go. Got a text earlier comparing it to the eyes of Dr. T.J. Eckelberg from The Great Gatsby, which is awesome. That is so funny. There's just no way he could start something new while that thing was in the meeting room right behind him or next to him all the time as he's trying to command the attention of these players. And there's this constant reminder of the Hall of Fame coach who was here before him. Yeah. Couldn't happen. But I never really thought until yesterday how hard it must have been for the last 5 years or so for the players here to live up to the massive personalities that had preceded them and all of the success stories of the Legion of Boom. Because yesterday we found out that they were getting rid of a lot of the pictures that lined the walls. Leonard Williams spoke about it specifically, said, yeah, all those pictures are gone.
And I remember the first day we came into the team meeting, Mike pointed out that, you know, there's empty walls in the hallways and things like that. And, you know, for a person like me, I think that made me really excited, and I hope it made the rest of the guys excited, because, you know, we're obviously going to respect tradition and the history of the Seahawks, but I think it's given us like a clean foundation to like create whatever we want to be. We're not chasing to like be like any other team that's been here before. We want to create our own identity.
I love that. And then he goes on to describe it even further.
Just to create our own identity. Like I said, like that's something that I loved about coming into the building and with the new coach. It just feels like a clean slate. It doesn't feel like we need to have pressure of like trying to chase anything. It's almost like just put one foot in front of the other and create our own identity, create our own team, and something that we can be proud of. And something that, like, when these rookies that are about to get drafted, they come in and they know the standard when they get here. You know what I mean? We don't have to teach them it. They're going to see from how we carry ourselves and how we react with each other. You know, these rookies are going to know the standard when they come in.
Oh, you know, my mind races a lot of different ways with this, right? Both from previous life experience. Heck, just my experience a couple weeks ago when I was down at a presidential event with Compassion International, you know, the big ministry. It's one of the, I think it's top number eight, not biggest nonprofit in America. And the president there is a really dynamic guy, amazing guy, former Olympian from El Salvador. I mean, just a Harvard educated, just a brilliant guy. Mm-hmm. And so the president before him is in the building still.
Tough.
And Jimmy, the new president's like, this never happens. He came from big, but he's like, this never, ever happens. A new CEO comes in and there is never a CEO emeritus. There's never a president emeritus, but that is the level of just like love and respect that the old president had for the new, for just the relationship these two guys have. It is out of this world. Never happens. Because when the new guy comes in, the new CEO comes in, the new coach comes in, what do they have to do? They have to create what you heard Leonard just say, our own new identity. And especially for a first-time head coach. Mike McDonald hadn't been, you know, two or three places, right? I don't know if Andy Reid would have come in here or Bill Belichick would have come in here. Would they have had to do that? Maybe not. Maybe not. But for a first-time head coach and a young staff, you do. You do. And let me just say one other thing, because we'll be down there next Thursday for the draft. There's two distinct hallways in that facility. One of them, you walk in, and Leonard's right. And you've seen him, Salk, on the way to the indoor facility. There's the tip. There's, you know, there's Beastquake jumping in the end zone. There are these four or five huge, or six maybe, huge photos of those most memorable moments. That's what Leonard's talking about. Make a right-hand turn and go out towards, as you go out towards the lot, what do you see? You see every player, a little plaque that's ever played for the Seahawks, drafted by the Seahawks, been on the Seahawks team. That's not coming down. Those aren't coming down. The history of the organization isn't coming down. What's coming down is the predecessor's enormous, huge moments that I think do have to come down, and that makes total sense to me.
Yeah, I think this is a must, and not only do I just applaud what Coach McDonald's doing, it got me thinking, Brock, about our time here, and I mentioned this earlier when we first started doing this show 15 years ago. I especially, but we were determined not to look backwards. Right. Mm-hmm. Partially because I didn't know anything about it, didn't really know the history and didn't really want to know the history because there really wasn't that much incredible history to learn. And for me, everything from the Holmgren era seemed old and just not worth focusing on. And it was real easy just being a newcomer to say, all right, anything pre-2009 never happened. But it's real easy to get caught up in the past. Right. Uh-huh. It's real easy. And I've been as guilty as anybody has in comparing every team, every player naturally to the players and team that we watched with the LOB season. So maybe that made some sense with Pete in charge because, you know, we knew that that was like his optimal team. And was he trying to recreate? It was always a conversation. But it had to be hard on those guys constantly being comped, constantly being asked questions about those Legion of Boom teams. So here's what I know. The only connection now left to the Legion of Boom is John Schneider. Basically, that's it, right? There's no players. There's no coaches. Maybe there's some other guys on John's staff. I mean,
Jaron Reed was around those guys.
He and Lockett are still part of some of them.
They were around those guys, but I don't. But they weren't here certainly for the championship seasons or even 14 or even 15. Nope. So, they're close. But they weren't here when they won. So I'm going to say that for the most part, they've really fully moved on past that, especially with Bobby's and Pete leaving at the end of this past season. It's different. There is no more comparison to the Legion of Boom, and I want to be held accountable on this. Don't let me compare everything to those guys because it's a different era, and they deserve to try to create their own thing.
Yep. Yeah, I don't see this. There's quite a bit of reaction to this, rightfully so, and everybody can have an opinion. And I think there was a lot of folks like, ooh, I don't really like that.
Are there people mad about this, or is this a straw man thing?
That's a good question. That's a good put out to the text. What have you felt this morning on the text?
I haven't really felt anything. Mac and Jack's text line 866-979-3776. Does this bother you?
Right.
Sorry.
I'm just wondering, like, do you think Pete Carroll's in any way offended by this? You think Pete Carroll's sitting there going, geez, Mike, like, thanks. Thanks for ripping my history right out of the building. And thanks for, I think Pete Carroll will totally understand.
Right.
Like, yeah, you guys got to go make your way now. Like, you got to set your path. And, you know, some of those things, sure, I think they're still going to raise the 12th man flag. I think those plaques of every player that has ever been a part of the organization, you know, on the wall or the nameplate, that's not going down. You know, I think the banners in the indoor facility showcasing their Super Bowl championship and their NFC championships, those aren't going down. None of that history is being thrown away.
No, but I think it's also relevant and important to say, look, we talked to KJ, right, who wanted to potentially work here, and that wasn't a job for him here, which is why he decided to go to San Francisco where there was a job for him. And I know people were upset with him, but it feels kind of now looking back on that, knowing what we know here, that maybe that was on purpose, that the new coaching staff doesn't really want to be associated with what was here before them.
You could celebrate the past, but you're not connected to it. So make your own connections, right? And I think that's what you hear from Leonard right there. Like, you know, this is not a disrespect to anybody that did everything before us, but we got work to do. We got to put our new photos on that wall, right? We got to put our new images on that wall. We, this whole new regime and all this new youth on the staff and everything else and all the new faces that are going to be here, you know, we are the ones that now have to set this journey. So I don't see this as a level of disrespect, but if you do, I think there are some that do.
I mean, I basically don't see any upset people here on the text line. Maybe one or two. Mm-hmm. Someone said Groz was. I didn't see that yesterday, but I'll go look for it. My career involves going into businesses and resetting cultures. Even if it's good within a business, you still have to set a standard or else there's a disconnect. I like this move. Let's see. I'm livid. No more tickets from me. I don't believe you.
253 says, I think you can take the fresh start stuff too far.
Okay, yeah, but what does like that mean? I mean, they're not like removing the Ring of Honor. I mean, like they're doing some stuff that no fan will ever see or would ever
That's
see.
That's my biggest point, is this is just stuff that's in the facility that
it's just
only
for the players. It's just so that there aren't these constant reminders. And by the way, that doesn't mean Marshawn Lynch can't come and visit or speak to
the
team or whatever.
Oh, he's banned. He'll never step.
All right, fine.
Problem.
It means Marshawn Lynch specifically can never come. No, I mean, like,
yeah.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see where this goes from here.
It's vindictive like an ex. You're going into your new partner's house and they still have their old wedding photos.
Are you sure?
It's not quite that degree of...
Are you sure?
You experienced that, Justin?
Maybe it is.
No.
I don't know. Whatever you say, Justin. We'll come back with everything you need to know and we'll focus on the Mariners who, Brock, I don't know if you noticed, have swept a series. Stick around. It's next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Winning series, Brock, that's yesterday's news. Today, it's all about sweeping series, and that's exactly what the Mariners did yesterday. Relentless pitching attack. Got it done. They just kept coming at you and coming at you and coming at you yesterday. It was Bryce Miller's turn for his third straight quality start. He was nasty.
Now the 2-2. Strike three called. He dots up a two-seamer, the lower outside edge. That's the seventh punch out for Bryce Miller.
Yeah, they allowed a grand total of 5 runs in the 3 games in this series. Not bad, considering Cincinnati came in averaging 12 runs per series. So, yeah, they did a pretty good job of keeping them off the bases, not really walking anybody, and just dominating, essentially, from the jump. And then, you know, you get just enough offense. You get a solo shot from Cal, solo shot from Rojas, and Mitch Garver even finally chipped in, Brock.
The 0-1 pitch to Garver. Swing, and it's club. High out to left field. Number one is sailing high and deep and gone for Mitch Garver.
So it's really now just Julio and Ty France.
What is Goldie's home run call going to be with Julio? He's sitting on some stuff here for 19 games. Like, it's going to be quite animated. You have said it multiple times, just thinking that this thought finally just hit my head. You'd said over the last couple weeks with Caitlin Clark, this is so cool. This is such a neat story. This is so refreshing. We don't normally get these stories. You know what? You know what's right in front of us, Salk? The development of 3 aces. That is totally new. We've seen great pitchers here for the Mariners. We've seen great pitching stories. Bro, these 3 guys right now, I mean, what if they all reach their ceiling?
What if they're all legit?
Yes.
And we haven't even seen Brian Wu yet.
I mean, you want to talk about a story that is unfolding in front of us here with start after start after start now for Bryce, who yesterday said, yeah, I didn't really even have my good stuff. I didn't even really feel it in my bullpen. It wasn't like I was, you know, just filthy.
Yeah, here's Bryce.
My approach is a lot different, lefties and righties. I still haven't, like, today I didn't feel very, very good coming into today, and I felt like today was one of those days that I didn't have my best stuff. It took me 3 or 4 innings to stop pulling everything. But as the game went on, I think it got better.
Yeah, and he now has another pitch he can use in those moments. So,
I mean, do we have Glavine, Smoltz, and Maddux? I mean, are we watching that story start to unfold?
Yeah, except you also still have Luis Castillo at the top of this thing, and I know that his first 2 starts were not what they were supposed to be. Well, the first pitcher. And I know at the his first 2 starts were not what they were supposed to be. His third one was like a 92% on their internal score. Mm-hmm. He was pretty good in that last outing. So if he's turned a corner,
he missed
as
one
well.
Too. He's 0-4. He's 0-4.
Okay, first 3 starts weren't Thank great. You. The next one was the one where he seemed to get it going.
No, you're absolutely right. And then you add him. You had that bonus of that veteran guy on there, man. That's a pretty neat story we're watching right before our
I think
eyes
that's short shrift if you call him just that veteran guy, but whatever. In any event, Mariners get themselves a sweep, and they're off to Colorado where the Rockies are struggling just 4-15.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
You ready for Rashad Penny to return, Brock?
No.
What do you mean no? He's a free agent. He's only 28. He doesn't cost anything, and you need another running back in camp. Why wouldn't you want Rashad Penny back?
No.
Really?
No. I don't think so. No. A guy that was consistently banged up, a guy that has had to fight his weight a little bit, a guy that got how many carries for Philly last
year?
2.
Weren't you just the guy saying we need to let go of the past?
Yes.
But I like Rashad Penny.
Yeah, we know.
What do you mean, yeah, we know? Bring back Rashad Penny. Quit messing around. There's no downside. Why wouldn't you want Rashad Penny back on this team? I can't believe you guys. You guys have no heart. No soul.
You sometimes.
And quite frankly, no sense of what to make of in the game of football. I don't think you guys know what you're talking about.
Simply just will not let go of something sometimes.
Bring back Rashad.
You just can't let it go.
Bring the man home.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
I said earlier, I don't even know whether you need to know this or not, but I played it earlier, so I'll play it again. This is Greg Doyle, Brock, who is, I think you might know him, the columnist for the Indy Star. Was he there when you were there?
I believe he was, yeah. He wasn't the, Kravitz, Bob Kravitz was the main kind of columnist.
Yes.
I think Doyle was around.
Okay, well, anyway, he's made a name for himself over the years. Unfortunately, what he did yesterday, this is his exchange with Caitlin Clark. It starts with him making the heart gesture that she makes to her family after the game.
Hi, Caitlin. Greg Doyle, Indy Star. Real quick, let me do this.
You like that?
I like that you're here. I like that you're here.
I do that at my family after every game, so.
Okay, well, let's start doing it to me and we'll be able to get along just fine.
Ugh.
You know what? If you wouldn't have done that second part,
right.
You kind of got a little bit of the Kirk Cousins. You like that? It might have turned into a little Kirk Cousins meme. Like, oh, you like that? You like that? But then he went all creeper.
It's super creepy after that. Yeah. He wrote a column where he apologizes and says that he was wrong. I think that, you know, there's a legitimate argument to be made that putting that in column form and then profiting off of your mistake doesn't quite feel right either. But anyway, that is the story out of Indy. That's everything you need to know. We do a quarter past every hour here on the Brock and
Smoke
Show.
So Bryce didn't feel good, huh? Bryce didn't feel like he had his stuff.
Yeah, he was pulling it a little bit, Brock. He was just pulling it.
Jeez.
Right? He just didn't have a consistent release point. I mean, he allowed one hit, one run, no big deal. But just didn't have the consistent release point. But thankfully, you know, had a few other things he needed, which is great.
Yeah, this is that evolution from an elite thrower that we watched last spring. And I think Maura, you and I were sitting in the stands watching his very first outing in the spring. And it was like, whoosh. Right. I mean, it was just that four seam gas at the top of the zone with the slider. And it was like, man, that looks like a filthy reliever. That looks like a guy that right now could come in and do a leveraged eighth inning because he's throwing 96, 97 with all of that rise at the top of the zone with the slider. Like, yep, that's a filthy reliever. And now he's turned himself into a four pitch difference maker,
an actual starter.
Yes.
And the two seamers helping with that.
Yes.
And the split is helping with that. And yeah, he looks like a different guy. And when you start throwing every single game another dominant start, that's seven straight quality starts. You're 5-2 during that stretch.
Yeah, and just
that's not an accident.
And I don't think he did it yesterday. The start before in game, he did one of the things that he does down in warmups in the bullpen where he kind of paused. Right where he kind of sat at the top and just delayed the delivery too. And I was like, oh, this dude.
He's just feeling comfortable.
He's just, right? It's fun, man.
He's just feeling very, very, very confident right now. All right. Coming up, I want to fast forward Brock all the way to tomorrow. I'll explain next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
I want to fast forward all the way to tomorrow, Brock. 26 hours from right now. We'll be opening up the phone lines as we do on Fridays. Tomorrow's Friday, right?
Today's
Thursday?
Yes.
Okay, good. Friday. I get these days confused, man. Yep. It feels like it's been like we're most of the way through the week. We're 1 week away from the draft. We're 1 week away from the race. Moore and I will be getting after it.
And she's getting feisty, huh?
She's getting super feisty. This is the feistiest I've ever seen, Maura. She is like outright name calling.
Earlier, he went out of his way to be like, did they take down that picture of Marshawn Lynch? Was he doing that thing where he grabbed his crotch when he went into the end zone? Because that's what I'm going to be doing next Thursday.
Who said that?
I did. First of all, I said midsection. I would never
I'm getting feisty.
Okay, he said I said midsection.
What?
Let's be clear.
What?
I said midsection.
You're going to do a crotch grab?
No, I just said when I'm that far ahead of Maura, I'm going to jump backwards over the finish line to show how easy this race really was.
Throw your back out.
In your spandex?
Can you imagine how much like road rash I'd end up with diving on a track doing that? Oh my gosh. Geez. Anyway, Brock, I don't want to fast forward all the way to next Thursday. I'm just fast forwarding to tomorrow when we open up the phone lines on the Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And generally that's a time when the Mariner fans love to call.
Yep.
What's that going to sound like tomorrow? A week ago, there's a lot of frustration. Earlier this week, there was a lot of frustration. Fire Scott Service. He doesn't know what he's doing, yada, yada. And since then, they came out and swept a series against the Reds.
Right.
Their pitching dominated. They've had seven straight quality starts, as we mentioned. Their offense came to life. In a three-game series, they scored 17 runs to Cincinnati's five. They hit five home runs, which they desperately needed to do. And they took 20 walks, which to me is the key to the series offensively.
Yep.
And all of that was against a pretty good Reds team. That's not a bad team. Mm-mm. That's a pretty good team that should compete for the playoffs, that has some good pitching, that's got a ton of fun, young talent. Ellie De La Cruz, obviously, but he's not the only one. Mm-hmm. So look, that series means no more than the lousy ones did against the Brewers or the Jays or the Cubs or the Guardians or whatever. But I think it just shows us the other side of the coin, that they are capable of doing what they did over the last three games. It's not just what we saw at the beginning of this season.
Mm-hmm.
There's some relevance to that. It's another data point, just like the first few series were.
Yeah. What is that line they say in golf? Drive for show, putt for dough.
Mm-hmm.
The Mariners pitching is their putting. That's their moneymaker. That's who they are. The challenge or the problem is, and most people love watching 350-yard drives more than they do, you know, a great putt or a great leave or a great two-putt or, you know, any great golfer, scratch golfer will tell you it isn't about what you do on the tee box. It's what you do in and around the green, right? That's your scoring. And that's where the Mariners, that their pitching is, as you said, they're pitching dominant. And even their bullpen, Salk, even guys right now, remember, you're without Brash and Santos. I mean, two of your three marquee guys going into this season. Now, you added Stanek, and I think you could probably compare him
to
a Santos.
Did, by the way.
Yes.
Where would this team be right now without going out and making that move? Just to have another guy so that you don't have to use Munoz every time or put somebody who really is not ready for that spot. That's been a really important move to get through this time without Santos and Brash. Anyway,
so I think you're still going to hear from, you know, hey, hold on a second. You know, we're going to need more out of JP. We're going to need more out of Julio. You're going to need more out of Garver. You're going to need more out. I mean, you still look at the numbers through 20
those
games.
Those things are true.
And those are all true.
100% true.
But man, that pitching erases a lot of ills.
Yep.
That kind of pitching where you go, whew. Look at that. Look at Kirby and Logan and Bryce and Luisa's start, as you said, which was also nailed. Like, when this thing gets humming and going, and we don't even have Brian Wu, right? The other arm in there that can be just as electric as Bryce Miller's arm. I mean, this is where it gets fun. This is where,
more so, depending on who you ask about it. So
yeah, this is where a passing says, hey, I'm really bullish on these guys.
Right.
This is where those guys that have watched thousands of baseball games, not hundreds. This is where those guys that are not as attached emotionally as we are, you know, as fans, and the connectedness that we have to some of the challenges over these. This is where you step back and those in baseball go, yeah. And you listen to David Bell say it after that series, like, get me the heck out of here. Like, hitting in this place versus that staff. No, thank you. And his team, you know, could speak to that. As you said, five runs over three games, and it was just no fun for them at all.
They couldn't get on base. They couldn't use all of the strengths that they have. I mean, they had came in with, what was it, Justin, 24 steals coming into that? 31 steals, coming into that. And maybe they had a couple in the series, but it certainly was not a game-changing factor. They just weren't able to threaten the Mariners because they weren't on base. Because you didn't walk anybody, and you didn't give up a lot of hits, and you just completely dominated them on the mound. Ryan Divish said this with us yesterday.
And the one thing about the Mariners, when you have that good of starting pitching, you don't have 6- and 7-game losing streaks. You just don't, because somebody's good enough to stop it. And I think, you know, I'll give a lot of credit to Scott. I mean, things were not going well these first few weeks, and there's been a lot of reason for people to freak out or players to kind of mutiny, and then do it, you know. And part of the reason is because he didn't change who he is, you know. The reactionary manager, and maybe he would have done this in his first year, you know, freaks out, you know, snaps at him, has the team meeting early and stuff, but you know, he's given these guys the freedom to be who they are and to trust in what they're doing. And I think that's important.
6- or 7-game losing streaks. They don't have 5-game losing streaks. Their longest losing streak all last year was 4 games.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, when you've got this crew, and you know, you should not get to ever a 5-game losing streak, because a Luis or a Logan or a George or a Bryce will stand on their head and give you, like they did yesterday. You realize they had 2 base runners the whole game for 5 years. It's been over 5 years since the Mariners have done that. The Reds had two base runners all game. One hit, that is prolific, right? Yeah, that's a good offense. I mean, that's not a bunch. That's not the Oakland A's. That's a playoff contending team with some guys that can rake, and they just they left their rakes in Cincinnati in this series.
Well, I think that does kind of bring up the second part of this conversation, and that is specifically about Scott, who was taking a lot of grief just a couple of days ago coming off of the Chicago series, and understandably so. I mean, I said at the time, look, if they don't do the things that they need to do, if JP doesn't get on base and Julio doesn't become Julio and the pitching doesn't pitch like it's supposed to, Scott's probably going to be in trouble, like, understandably, right? Like, at some point, you just need to make a change, whether it's his fault or not. At some point, you just say, hey, you got to do something different.
I mean, that's
the job. Everybody knows that.
That's the job. That's what is he? The third longest tenured? Is he the third longest tenured manager? Something like that?
I'm sure he is. 9 years? I thought it would have been number one or pretty darn close to it.
Yeah, whatever it is. I mean, it's way up there. You know the job.
Regardless, he didn't freak out. He didn't press the panic button. Mm-hmm. He didn't tip over Gatorade tables or whatever else it is that people want the manager to do. He didn't do any of those things. He was patient. He makes small adjustments. They're not public. They're not loud. He's not brash. He doesn't overreact. He simply kind of does what needs to be done without making it a big deal. And in this case, I would say he did a couple of little things. One, he listened to his players. He talked to them. He said, okay, what's the deal? What do we need to do differently? Why isn't this working? And it feels like some of the feedback was, it's a lot of information, man. We're trying to put it all together. We understand why you're giving it to us, but it's a lot all at once. Can we simplify it? And by all accounts, that's kind of what they did. Here's Mitch Garver talking about just how simple he's trying to keep it.
Yeah, I think we're getting back to kind of the player I have been. Pretty much just dominating fastballs. It's kind of my game plan, being able to lay off the spin. There were a few like mechanical adjustments that I was like chasing balls way off the plate, which I don't normally do. And so we're working on tightening those things up.
Yeah, all right. So there's some mechanical stuff, but generally just keep it simple. Mm-hmm. Crush fastballs, lay off the breaking stuff. And we don't have sound of this, unfortunately, but this is from Jen Mueller. Yesterday, she tweeted this. Interesting note from the Mariners pregame media session. Service says the last two nights, there's been a concerted effort to look at the iPads less in the dugout. Guys often look at their swings between at bats. The change was suggested by coaches and players. That's a fantastic job of leading, of saying, all right, the strategy we're trying is relevant. It's important. It will help long term, but it's not the only way to do it. Let's listen. Let's make some small changes. And the next thing you know, you score 17 runs in a three-game stretch against some pretty good pitching. And I can't help but think that there's a connection between those two things.
Yeah, I think we kind of talked about feel versus analysis, right? And one of the calls on Monday and one of the texts on Monday said, sorry, you know, it's not C-ball, hit ball. Or, you know, you can't play in the big leagues today if that's your, you know, whole mentality. You've got to have more to it, more depth. You've got to understand your weaknesses and understand adjustments. And that's totally true as well. It is a lot of information. But sorting through that information, sorting through that amount of data, Salk, so you can still go out there. Can you imagine? Goodness gracious. Can you imagine if sitting in your golf cart was an iPad and you looked at every one of your last swings?
Yes.
Can you imagine how much you in your mind would get in your head and tinker and be like, oh, okay.
I don't know. Right, it does help me sometimes though. Like I'll go out with somebody like, hey, do you mind just taking it? Like if I'm not doing well, I will definitely want to see the swing, be like, oh, okay, I see what I'm doing wrong. Okay. Let's make that change.
But every swing?
No, it'd be a lot. That'd be a lot. Hey, why did I chunk that wedge this? Oh, why did I chunk that? Why did I top that? Oh, why did I putt that 30 feet past the hole?
Yeah. Is there a reason that those golfers don't do that on every shot?
No, they're
every
not allowed.
Hole? Yeah, and I don't think, maybe some would, and that's the point. There's some of those 20
guys like Bryson DeChambeau absolutely would.
There's some of those 25 in that dugout or whatever, 12 positional players, 13 that do. And it is
a lot of info out there. I mean, I don't know if you've been out to batting practice recently, but if you go out to batting practice and just look up at the Jumbotron during it, Mariner Vision, whatever it is, Mariner Vision. They're They're showing the exit velocity and launch angle and distance of every ball they hit in batting practice on the big screen. So, like, I mean, that information is everywhere. And as Divish said, or I think or it was Passan who said earlier, like, hey, a lot of the young players, that's how they come up. Like, that's what they want. But that doesn't mean everybody that's needs to fit into the same bucket. In any event, what I liked about Scott here is just the patience to say, hey, you know, we're good. We know who we got. Divish saying the players didn't freak out. Scott's main job is to keep the culture together, right? That's his. That's the biggest job of a manager today.
This is where continuity should pay off.
Yeah.
This is where all of those years of time on task together, it's going to be the antithesis of the Seahawks this fall. It's going to be a lot of newness, a lot of first times for a lot of those men that are equipped and they've got the background to do it.
A bunch of times. That's right. Which is a problem, by the way, that it continues to happen year after year. But he does seem to know how to handle it.
Yeah, it gives us a little momentum and it calms the masses, so to speak. And that's okay. You know, we have high expectations for this team. The players have high expectations for themselves. I think the difference with this club is their ability to recognize where they're at and being able to handle the truth. And when you're not going very well, sometimes you need to tell them the truth. Some teams will fold and not feel good about it. Our guys just stand up and say, yeah, we're not very good right now. How are we going to get better? And not afraid to make some adjustments. To credit to the players, it is about them. I believe in this group. I said it Sunday after we lost a tough game. I just believe in the makeup of this crew, and certainly we have plenty of talent.
Last thought on this. He said they weren't good right now, and I think that you can apply a similar statement or an opposite statement after the series against the Reds. They're good right now. You got to keep adding the right now. And I am no more convinced that they're great because of how awesome they've been for the last three games than I was that they were terrible based on some of the games before that. Right now, they're 9-10. They are a game behind Texas, who sneaked out a win yesterday late after their bullpen collapsed again. And they haven't knocked themselves. They haven't done anything yet. They haven't proven themselves. They haven't knocked themselves out. They haven't buried anybody in their division. By the way, everyone in the division is still in it, including the Astros, and the A's have played pretty good ball. But they also haven't buried themselves. They're just kind of feeling their way into this season. Yep. And now at least we've gotten a chance to see what it's supposed to look like in addition to the garbage that they threw out there for the first couple weeks.
To put a little bow on all of that conversation, since this team rebuilt themselves, since they, you know, were all on those yellow legal pads and they made a decision in that boardroom that we are going to tear this thing down and we're going to start over and we're going to build a new young core and we're going to do it through pitching and draft pitcher with every single pick of a draft. And we're going to do it this way. So I think the thing that you can say through all these ups and downs and a playoff run and a miss in the playoffs and everything else, this group led by Scott handles hard times, handles valleys really well. I think that is, and I think Divish would say the same thing. Yeah, I think Shannon would say the same
success.
Thing.
Yeah. Expectations and some of that stuff.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, that's a fair sentiment on the other side. But
just when you think that they're at the bottom, they find a way to start digging themselves back out of it.
Yep.
One other note from yesterday, you noticed that Cal once again played a day game following a night game.
I did.
If you are Sebi Zavala, I don't know how you can stay on the roster if they're going to keep doing that. There's just no purpose in having you here. So that is just a little something to watch. Right now, time for some Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Heward breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
All right, question number one for you, Brock, as we'll switch gears back to football here for a few minutes. I don't know what the Seahawks are going to do with their first round pick. What does Vegas think they're going to do? Where's the line?
The money?
Now?
Yeah, you can bet on anything in Vegas.
What does Jontae Porter think?
Oh, ouch. Vegas thinks that an offensive lineman, so they went through every first pick.
Okay.
Whatever the first pick is going to be, whenever that is. So not necessarily first round. Seahawks could trade down and trade out of the first round and everything else. But Vegas believes it will be an offensive lineman, minus 155. Number two, defensive line edge, Jared Verse. Plus 175.
The defensive line or edge?
Yes.
You get both and one
So just
bet?
Line of scrimmage. Basically, Vegas is telling you it's going to be the line of scrimmage.
But wait, so is that two different bets? Do they consider D-line?
They have them together.
Interesting.
So, defensive line, edge, plus 175.
I think O-lineman, I would take that bet just because it would give you so many different options.
Yep. Third on the list, linebacker at plus 1,000. So it jumps significantly.
No quarterback, huh?
Quarterback would be plus 1,200. And if you want a running back, plus 10,000.
They take a running back, as I said. You would need to get the $10,000 back in order to make up for the damage I would do to whatever spot I was in. So, well, you mentioned offensive linemen. One of the best opportunities they'll have is Troy Faltano. He's going to join us tomorrow at 8:30 on the show. So looking forward to talking to Troy Faltano. Right now, question number two. If they are going to trade, Brock, what does that look like?
Yes, okay. Work with me here.
Okay.
We're going to do a little mutual, and Justin Amora, you can pop in here as well. A Hawk blogger yesterday put together a list of the possible trades using Rich Hill's trade value chart, and these all fall within 10 points on that chart. So there's one, two, three, four. I'll give you five different trade scenarios. You tell me which one you want to do. Seattle trades their first, number 16, for Pittsburgh's 20th. And 98th in the third round.
You'd say it again. You trade 16 for
for 20. So you move four spots down, and then you get another third rounder. So you want to write these down?
Yeah, 20 and 98.
Yep. So with Pittsburgh, you get 20 and 98.
Yep.
With Dallas, you trade your first and your fourth. So you're going to throw in your 118th pick, but you get their 24th and their 57th.
Okay.
So you 24th and 57th.
Yep.
With Green Bay, right? Someone you're familiar with. You can make some moves with Green Bay. You trade your 16th and again your fourth. So you're throwing in, you know, that fourth rounder for some value to get back 25, 58, and another sixth rounder. So 25 and 58. I think you're kind of starting to get the feel for this, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you one more. The Rams, you trade your 16th for their 19th and 99th. 19th and 99th. So any of those whet your appetite or give you a feel? To me, it gives you a feel of what you're looking at.
They all whet my appetite, yeah.
Yes.
I think probably the Pittsburgh one.
Yeah.
Or the Dallas one would be the two that I would look at the most.
Yep. Just try to find a way. I mean, I kind of like the third one, the 25th and the 58th and the 24th and the 57th. Like, give me a give me something there before 60, right? Give me something there. We've talked a lot about this. How can I – now, the best news is unlike maybe previous years and certainly the Julian Love year where, you know, you're left kind of holding the bag like, golly, nobody wants to trade. People are going to want this one at 16. If this falls the way we think it's going to fall, there is going to be some leverage to be gained, and I really hope that John can manipulate it and get the best bang for the buck.
Pretty good. All right, question number three. I don't know whether I have the sound for you here or not, but Witherspoon was asked yesterday about how he was going to be deployed in 2024, and he didn't say a whole lot. What's up with that?
He was pretty coy. He was pretty coy because he's going to be everywhere. If this scheme is what I believe it is you're going to go in week to week, kind of like Brant Brown's trying to do offensively with this is how we're going to win this week. And I don't think he's going to play 17 games at nickel. I don't think he's just going to come four to a side. I don't think he's going to, you know, I think that's what you're hearing matriculate out with these different players. And we'll continue through OTAs and into training camp is, man, there is a lot more volume. There's a lot more volume in this offensive playbook. There's a lot more volume in this defensive playbook. And yet within that volume, Salk, the biggest key is going to be making sure these guys individually know their role and can simplify it down. So that just illusion of complexity to you and me and to that opponent that's like, wow, these guys do so freaking much. And yet for the guys playing it, it's like, yeah, I'm glad you think it's that way because for us, it's not. It's simplified in the building to be complex outside the building. And I think you will hear more and more of that as time moves on.
All right, that's today's Blue 88. Yeah, as I think about these a little more, the Dallas one is probably the one that intrigues me the most.
Okay.
You give up your fourth, okay, fine, and then you get back number 24 and number 57. So in order to basically move back eight spots, you come up from your fourth round to 57.
Yep.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yep.
I'm into that.
And Buffalo is another one. That would be another one that's on here. You trade your 16th, just your 16th. Now you move down 12 spots, but you get a number 60, and then you get a fifth rounder, 160 as well. So, you know, there's going to be, as I said, there is going to be teams like and opportunities. You don't like that one as much?
Not as much. No, yeah. I think of all of these, the one that I would like the most is the Dallas one. Yeah, mm-hmm. 24. Give me 24 and 57, and I'll eat the fourth round pick for it.
I don't see the Washington one or Philly. There's a couple teams that have 2 second round picks, so that must not be on the trade chart. There just must not be enough value kind of equivalent. But that would be kind of another thought, too, is do you come all the way out of that first round to really start to accumulate those picks into the second and third? So all things that they're going through right now, man, 7 days before this draft, right? This is, they can no longer bring guys into the building. I think starting to what? I guess they can still go out until Tuesday. But by and large, you are now in-house. By and large, you are cranking away. You're putting your plans together. You're putting all your backup plans together. You're putting every contingency you can. And you're probably pulling 18 to 20-hour days right now to make sure all the hay is in the barn so the emotion is out. And next Thursday, 7 days from right now, you have a calculated plan you can execute.
Well, Brock, you told us that offensive line was the number one bet in Vegas. Guy who really loves these offensive line prospects is Booger McFarland. He's going to join us coming up at 8:30 this morning. Before we get there, it's time for one of our favorite games. We'll play it next on Brock and Salk.